back to the second hour of Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Well, I'm really pleased to have with me again Mickey Fulp. And Mickey Fulp, he is a certified professional geologist with a bachelor's of science degree in earth sciences with honor from the University of Tulsa and an M.S. in science geology from the University of New Mexico. He's over 30 years of experience as an exploration geologist. He's also a newsletter writer who I've come to know quite well at various conferences. He and I actually worked together for a short period of time a few years ago, but Mickey is very well known, highly respected throughout the mining community for his ongoing work as an analyst, and he writes and he speaks at these conferences, but he brings with him the advantage of understanding earth sciences and exploration risks and opportunities. So welcome, Mickey. It's really good to have you back again.
Well, thanks a lot, Jay. It's always a pleasure.
I'm really sorry, Mickey. I know that you are a diehard St. Louis Cardinals fan. And, you know, I can't say that my heart exactly bled for you. I was a fairly happy baseball fan this year that the Yankees lost and didn't make it even to the finals. And so I consider a victory as a Cleveland Indians fan who never gets to see a sniff of anything at the end of the season. But your Cardinals did extremely well, and I guess you packed your bags differently now. You were going to go out to St. Louis for the game, but now you're heading to New Orleans for a conference down there tomorrow.
That's right. I took all the red gear out and some cool weather gear, and I'm going down to the Big Easy for Brian London's conference. Jay, this is the longest-lived precious metal conference in North America, something going on 37 years now.
Yeah, that sounds right. I know that, you know, I mean, it goes back a long ways. I know when James Blanchard was actually running that conference, and I was still working as a banker, he invited me to attend once, and I couldn't because I was working full-time. And, you know, I've never been to that conference yet for all of these years, so I hope to get down there sometime in the near future to attend. It is a different sort of a conference where people have to pay to get in, so it sort of perhaps encourages people with more money or people with less money not to attend, perhaps. But how many exhibitors do you expect there? Is it anything?
I think my guess is there's going to be somewhere around 50 companies, and that's the usual amount. And I think the average attendance is probably plus or minus maybe 500 or 600 people. So it much like Radeza's show in Chicago, it's a boutique conference, and the fact that costs a significant penny, a few hundred bucks to attend. So, it's generally, people that are, perhaps not novices in this business, but certainly hard assets type people.
Sure. Well, it is a different crowd. I mean, you and I know than traveling to different conferences, the culture is somewhat different from the West Coast to the middle America for sure. But anyway, our last guest was just talking about Mark Faber's talk about bread and circus, and I have to think, you know, Mickey, it is true that in America we have lots of diversions, and there's certainly nothing wrong with enjoying a good baseball game and doing these sort of, you know, having fun in life, that's for sure. But on the other hand, I think that the point was made by our last guest, and Mark Faber has talked about how in America people are asleep at the switch basically because they're all having a great time all the time and they're not really focusing on some of the real things. And I think what people really should be doing is paying attention to their investment dollars for sure and trying to really understand what's going on in the economy. And then, you know, once you have a sense of where things are going, or you believe you do at least, then you want to focus on what kind of investments. And you know that I am very much a hard money advocate, which is, I guess, why you and I have first met up some time ago. But you are really focused on the resource sector, your trade, your skill sets take you there for sure as an exploration geologist. So what are your thoughts now? What do you focus on most? Let's say forget individual projects, just from a macro point of view, what sort of commodities do you think are the ones that people should be focusing most on right now?
Well, that's a good question, and I can't give hard answers because, I mean, I have some favorite commodities, and certainly gold is always up there because that's what runs this junior resource market. As goes gold, so goes the market for the most part. Right now, I am involved with a copper company, a graphite company, a uranium company, a prospect generator in South America, a rare earth element company. Those are the ones that I cover. I currently cover only 7 companies.
Mm-hmm.
But I hold probably 35. I have, I noticed your, advertiser list. Some of those companies I currently cover, some, I've covered in the past, and we took our profits and moved on. I'm also, one of your companies is one of the oil and gas companies, that I am invested in. So it's kind of a mixed bag. Those metals that I mentioned, a couple other specialty metals have attracted my attention lately, but for the most part, I look at individual projects. Certainly the commodity pay, comes into play very early on, but it really comes down to the individual project.
Well, for sure. That is no question about that. I have noticed though, Mickey, in doing my own, sort of research on relative values, and I look at gold relative to the Rogers Raw Materials Fund, and it's gone up very dramatically since Lehman Brothers went down in 2008. But some of these things you're mentioning, for example, graphite, rare earth metals, they don't have markets that speculators can speculate in. I think it was Paul Van Eeden was talking recently about the iron ore markets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his thesis was that copper and some of these other base metals that are used in industry, the reason they're so high priced right now is because of the speculative money that's going in there from a lot of the hedge funds, and they have organized forward markets. But in any event, whatever the case is, what about rare earths? What about the rare earths now? How are they stacking up price-wise in general? I know there's just, and one of the problems that I've had with rare earths is the learning curve, coming up to learn about the different metals. Each of them have different markets. And then the big risk that I've always seen, Mickey, in getting involved with one of these rare earth companies is if somebody else comes out or somebody finds a big deposit, that's maybe all you need in that given market, right?
Well, your point's well taken. There's certainly only room for a few rare earth element, new rare earth element producers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a contrarian, so I tend, and because I'm a commodities guy, most of my appearances, certainly on business television shows, are really focused around commodities. So I've studied commodities my entire career. In the rare earth sector, I got in early. I saw something coming. As it actually happens, Jay, it was a job I did for you about over 5 years ago,
yeah.
And it introduced me to a company called Avalon Ventures and Avalon Rare Metals. I did a report, and I continued to follow that company, and I saw something there that made me think that rare earths were going to take off.
Mm-hmm.
I got in early. I got in a year or more early, and then all of a sudden it took off. So the rare earth sector has been a bubble. The valuations have gone up and come back down. I'm working on a piece right now about the only remaining company I cover in that space, but it went parabolic. But if you look at there's an 800-pound gorilla on the block in rare earth element space, and that's Moly Corp. And if you look at what I call the cream of the crop, which is the 4 companies I got in very early on, they were all Venture Exchange listed at the time. They have all since graduated to the Amex Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at their charts, they all look pretty much like Moly Corp. The company that I can mention if you want. It's Quest Rare Minerals. In Quest, we picked that stock late in the game. It was the last rare earth element stock I picked, if memory serves. Picked it at $2.85. In 12 months, it went to $8.30.
Oh,
it's now trading at $1.25, a 4-year low.
Uh-huh.
So this illustrates the point that I've always made, and this is my philosophy. I am a trader. Mm-hmm. I don't fall in love with these stocks. I don't hold them for, I'm not a buy and hold guy, I'm a trader. And the philosophy we use is when they double, you sell half and take your money off the table. Well, if you did that with Quest, you would have been, highly rewarded. We had almost a 290% return in 12 months. So sitting there at $1.25 right now in a very beaten up sector because of Molly Corp's bad earnings released a month or two ago, very much missed consensus on the street. The sector got beaten up again, and it so you look at these things now, and maybe it's a buying opportunity. I'm not averse to coming in and out of stocks. I'm
sure.
Also not averse to having a longer term, if you will, investment position than having a trading position too.
Would Quest be your top pick in that sector now, or is there something else that you like better?
Well, there's some other ones I continue to like. I very much like Tasman Metals Limited, operating in Sweden. I don't cover Tasman anymore. I kind of considered my work was done. We mutually agreed that I was going to cease coverage about a year ago, but we had, we picked that at $1. Within two or 4 weeks, it went to 50 cents in the first Greek crisis. But then it went all the way up to $5.98. So in that case, we had almost a six bagger, in 12 months. And Tasman is a very good company. I still hold, the majority of my position, although it's not one I formally cover my newsletter anymore.
What is the symbol of that one as well as Quest?
Quest would be QRM, and that's the same symbol both on the Toronto and the AMEX. Being U.S. citizens, it much behooves us to trade in the U.S. when we can. And then Tasman is TSA on the AMEX, and it's TSM on the Toronto Exchange.
All right, Mickey, talk to us a little bit about graphite. What's the story on graphite? This is another one of those things that I miss because I'm such a gold bug. But graphite, it seems to me, is there room for a lot of new producers? If that were even possible, and usually there, you and I know the odds are very much against exploration companies ever becoming producers or even finding projects that ultimately become producers. But, what is the story here on graphite? Why is it as hot as it was? It was really one of the hot, commodities.
Your last question first. It's not as hot as it was once in the spring. The reason that it got hot is prices increased, and the reason that prices increased is because China supplies something about 75% of the world's graphite, natural graphite, and they're running out of good quality graphite, which is determined by the size of the graphite grains called flake size. So they're running out, they're restricting imports or exports, the quality of graphite that's coming across the Pacific or wherever it's going has been, is questionable at times. So there became, because China forced all of the Western world graphite producers out of the market about 20 years ago, about 10 to 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So all the graphite mines in North America and Europe shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So the price goes up. There's a buzz on the street, and the juniors flock in. Now, once again, I got in early, and I looked at my first graphite company over 2 years ago. I had an opportunity to get in one privately. The problem is it had a bulletin board listing without a venture listing.
Yeah,
you and I both know, and I think you probably told your listeners how to beware of those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You know, Mickey, I want to make sure that we let our listeners know where they can follow your work, because you have a website. Tell them what that is before I forget. I want to make sure they have that.
Okay, it's mercenarygeologist.com. We also run mercenarygeologist.asia in simplified Chinese, at Twitter, at mercenarygeo. We're now over 20,000 Twitter followers, and we're up to 6,500 subscribers. And I also have a 24/7 radio station, internet radio, mercenarygeologist.fm, and this interview will be posted there soon.
Oh, interesting. Okay, very good. So there's a lot of places that people can keep up with your ideas and hopefully profit from them. So what is your favorite, if you care to share that, what is your favorite graphite flavor?
Oh, absolutely, and it's a company I'm a very early on shareholder in, Flinders Resources. It's the same people that run Tasman, same people that run a company I also cover called Mawson, a gold explorer in Finland. But make a long story short, Flinders has a past producing mine in central Sweden. I've been there. They are on a production scenario right now. They are selling stockpile graphite. We fully expect somewhere certainly by Q1 of 2014, if not before, they will be in full commercial production on a past producing graphite mine, flake graphite, very good grades, about 8 to 9% graphite, and a good mix of product sizes with past producing or past customers, I should say, that they're selling to now. So it's a company that we picked pre-IPO, IPO day, it traded one trade at $1.10, the next trade was $1.88, just to illustrate some volatility and how you should, the volatility in this sector. It went up to as high as $3.20. It went back as low as $1.18. It is now trading at $1.30. So there is some downside risk because of the price of the stock, but you know, Jay, I put money in the last private placement at $1.70. So I very much like this story. These are miners and people that have done it before, and I think it's going to be very successful.
It's very important. Flinders, what's the symbol and how many shares are out, more or less?
FDR is the symbol, and there are somewhere, I'm having trouble pulling this off the top of my head right now, but there's somewhere, if memory serves, about 50 million shares. I know that fully diluted, with warrants at $2.20 on the last financing, that we fully expect this company to come into production with about 65 million shares outstanding,
mm-hmm. Wow,
which
that's
is
not bad.
Quite good. And I say we because I've been involved with this company from the get-go. The money needed to put this in production has already been raised. Something like $21 million has been raised. They're probably sitting in a kitty right now of about $15 million, and that will get the mine into commercial production. It's really hard to beat.
Has the company provided some guidance with respect to what it expects, sort of cash flow numbers at various prices of graphite?
They have not, and in fact, they just released the first resource, official 43-101 resource, within the last couple of months, maybe. And so the next thing will be a PEA, but the fact that it is a past producer, a successful past producer, and it will be a low-cost producer, the price of flake graphite right now is somewhere large flake graphite, $1,500 to $1,800 a ton, and we would certainly expect Flinders to have a very high cost margin, certainly 50% or more.
Well, That's very interesting. Well, it certainly would be a story I'd want to take a closer look at. Take a look at, I should say. I haven't looked at it at all. I haven't really found the time to get into the graphite sector. But talk to our listeners a little bit, Mick, if you would, about graphite and why, you know, what is it used for? I mean, I think graphite is pencils, but it's mm-hmm. not pencils.
Well, pencils is about 4% of the market, actually,
okay.
Jay.
Okay.
So the lead in your pencil is still made out of graphite and always has been. But the main uses historically have been for refractories in the metals business. For instance, I'll give you a little anecdote. The British won a couple of wars in the 16th century because they had a graphite deposit near Cumbria in England, and they were able to make molds to make cannonballs rounder and with less flaws. So it's used in the refractory business. It's used as lubricants. You know, we all probably have that little bottle, squeeze bottle of graphite, so
mm-hmm.
that's
sure.
To put in your locks. It's used increasingly in friction parts for automobiles, so that would be brake linings and clutch linings and things such as that. But the real driver for this, Jay, is the lithium ion battery industry, and it's got nothing to do with these, with what I consider, an industry that's not going to make it, especially in, at least in North America, and that's the hybrid electric car business. I don't know if you've seen the latest numbers on the Volt and the Leaf, but they're horrible.
Yeah.
But lithium ion batteries use five times as much graphite as they do lithium, and but we're talking about the miniature batteries in your calculator, in your iPod, in your cell phone, in your computer, all that stuff. And what's happened is historically that's been filled by synthetic graphite market, but synthetic graphite sells for $10,000 to $20,000 a ton. So we now have the technology to make spherical graphite, which is what you've got to do. You take the flakes and you kind of make them oval or round. They look like under a microscope, little potatoes. So you make mm-hmm. spherical graphite. So we now have developing technologies that are able to use natural graphite for that, and that is the real demand driver, and we're seeing that right now.
Well, it's certainly a very, very fascinating topic, Mickey, and so we've got some ideas there. People can go to your website and all those other places to follow your ideas. What would be one of your favorite gold stock plays?
Well, I'll tell you one that you and I share in common, and that's Brazil Resources, and
uh-huh.
I'm sure your listeners know about that.
Yeah.
So I don't need to go into any more detail.
Yeah.
I picked it probably for the same reasons you did. Now I must say once again, that all these companies I talk about are sponsors, and I own the stock, so I'm strongly biased. I was a early private placement shareholder of BRI, but I know the Amir Adnani very well.
Yeah.
I'm also a holder of UEC, Uranium Energy Corp. The other one I would put out there that listeners might want to take a look at would be Mawson Resources.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's related to the graphite company you just mentioned.
Yeah, same management, and they have a bonanza grade gold discovery in Finland. They just received some important claim confirmations where they now have exploitation concessions in Finland on some of their claims, which allows them to drill more of the favorable ground. The permitting process in Finland is quite slow, but it always seems to come about eventually. That's a stock we picked just about 2 years ago, 2 years on the anniversary of San Francisco Gold Show at 97 cents. In 7 days, it went to 268.
Wow.
It has gone as low as $1.06, as high as 213 in the last year. Currently trading about $1.25 or $1.30, and it did a couple of spin outs, essentially a 20 cent dividend with two spin outs in the late summer.
Oh.
So once again, I got to go back with the idea, Jay, that these stocks, every junior in any 52-week period will have a double from its high and a low. We operate solely on the idea of picking these stocks that will double in 12 months or less. And they all do, so if you're contrarian, you buy them when no one else wants them, you'll be successful.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, although some of the stocks, and I don't know that that's necessarily, I mean, maybe one of the issues that you look at when you buy something, but is there enough liquidity to get a large position in and out, and how many people are going to play the same game? So there is that caveat. I might also mention to our listeners that while Mickey is admitting his bias, which is certainly, we all have our biases, but I would say this, that before Mickey gets involved in a deal, he also is very careful about who he's getting involved with. So it's I would just say that in fairness to you, Mickey, that that you know, it's not like you're just taking money from people. If you see somebody that's that you think isn't going to be a good prospect, you stay away. There's certainly enough good ones out there, aren't there?
Well, there are, Jay, and look at the numbers. There's something about 1,700 of these juniors. I currently cover seven. I have a self-imposed limit of 10. So if you look at that, that's about a half a percent of all the companies out there. So I'm very, very particular in the companies I pick. And a lot of that came from my work with you. You know, Jay, I still use a version that more from your due diligence checklist, and I now call that my company evaluation form, and so we're all asking the same questions all the time.
That's true, but you're using your knowledge of geology to give you a little bit of an advantage that some of the rest of us might not have. But it really was true, Mickey, and we're out of time, unfortunately, but I was going to ask you to go over your you're looking for the fatal flaws, right? And that's what you're always looking at, fatal flaws. Maybe another time we'll have you back soon to talk about what are the fatal flaws that investors should be looking for when they invest in these things, because God knows they're high risk, high return. It's a high risk, high return game, and so people need to be very cognizant of the risk. So, Mickey, I want to thank you very much for spending your time with us. Have a great time in New Orleans. I guess I'll catch up with you in San Francisco in a couple of weeks.
I look forward to that, Jay. Thank you very much.
All the best. Take care.